It's time to love cats. The Purrcast is on. Today on the Purrcast, we drop in on another place and time, far, far from here. Why don't you come along for the ride? It is good to be back after a week off due to a very, very pressing work schedule. We're back with our next episode. There are a few things that I've always wondered about, but never at the same time I've been in a position to look into them. And today's episode is about one of those things. Let me ask, have you ever heard of a man named Terry Pratchett? He was an English author, lived 1948 to 2015. And he was attributed with a quote that'll probably be familiar to you. Cats were worshipped as gods in ancient Egypt, some versions say ancient times, and they have not forgotten this. End of quote. Well, for those of us who fancy cats, that's very believable. We would probably agree with that. But were they actually worshipped in ancient Egypt? Turns out, they were kinda sorta. But before we dive into that, let me give you some background. Context. What do we mean when we say ancient Egypt? Well, ancient Egypt covers roughly the same area that present-day Egypt does. And when we locate it in time, it lasted about 3,000 years, roughly the 3,000 years before Christ. That takes in a lot of ground that I have no chance of covering completely. So to narrow it down, we're going to look at a time period roughly between 1550 and 1050 BC. This period in ancient Egyptian history was called the New Kingdom. Roughly 1567 to 1085 BC. And I'm going to read to you a little here. I have virtually no chance to pronounce all these names correctly, so if you're an Egyptologist, my apologies in advance. This is the time period we're talking about, 1567 to 1085. Under Akhmos I, the first king of the 18th dynasty, Egypt was once again reunited. During the 18th dynasty, Egypt restored its control over Nubia and began military campaigns in Palestine, clashing with other powers in the area such as the Mitannians and the Hittites. The country went on to establish the world's first great empire, stretching from Nubia to the Euphrates. Maybe you can Google that if you're interested. In addition to such powerful kings as Amenhotep, Thutmose I, and Amenhotep, these guys collectively ruled from about 1546 to 1379, the New Kingdom was notable for the role of women such as Queen Hatshepsut, 1503 to 1482. Who began ruling as a regent for her young stepson. He later became Thutmose III, Egypt's greatest military hero, but rose to wield all the powers of a pharaoh. This is the queen. The controversial Amenhotep IV, 1379 to 1362, about a 17-year reign, of the late 18th dynasty, undertook a religious revolution, disbanding the priesthood dedicated to Amun-Re, a combination of the local Theban god Amun and the sun god Re, and forcing the exclusive worship of another sun god, Aton. renaming himself Akhenaten, servant of the Aten. He built a new capital in Middle Egypt called Akhetan, known later as Arama. Upon his death, the capital returned to Thebes, and the Egyptians returned to worshiping a multitude of gods. In the 19th and 20th dynasties, known as the Ramesside period, for the line of kings named Ramses, saw the restoration of the weakened Egyptian empire and an impressive amount of building, including great temples and cities. According to biblical chronology, the exodus of Moses and the Israelites from Egypt probably occurred during the reign of Ramses II, 1304 to 1237 BC. Nice little interesting tie-in there, I thought. With only one exception, all the New Kingdom rulers, this is where you need to start listening. I know some of your eyes are forming X's and you're fighting sleep now, but stick with me. This is the interesting part. With only one exception, all the New Kingdom rulers were laid to rest in deep, rock-cut tombs, not pyramids, in the Valley of the Kings, a burial site on the west bank of the Nile opposite Thebes. Most of these tombs were raided and destroyed, with the exception of the tomb and treasure of Tutankhamun, who ruled from 1361 to 1352. Tutankhamun, King Tut. His tomb was discovered largely intact in AD 1922, fairly recently, historically. The splendid mortuary temple of the last great king of the 20th dynasty, Ramses III, who ruled from 1187 to 1156 BC, was also relatively well preserved and indicated the prosperity Egypt still enjoyed during his reign. Now, how would his tomb indicate prosperity? We've all seen what by now might be to us stereotypical Egyptian art, the ones with the people in their hands doing the Egyptian walk and wearing those white garments with the cool collars that go from the top of their head all the way down to their shoulders. That art on the tomb walls was a record of the person who was interred there. It wasn't just art for art's sake. It was their biography, not only of them, but of the nation during their time if they were kings. As we'll see later, every family had its own burial tomb. But of course, as you'd expect, not every family was among the burial place of kings or pharaohs. The kings who followed Ramses III were less successful. Egypt lost its provinces in Palestine and Syria for good and suffered from foreign invasions, most notably the Libyans, while its wealth was being steadily but inevitably depleted. So, kind of a roller coaster, rise and fall 500 years. And I'll just add one fairly interesting thing. Again, we've all heard of King Tut, probably. Ruled 1361 to 1352 BC. And his tomb was discovered largely intact, probably the best preserved modern-day discovery of this period in 1922. And it's from the tomb art in these tombs, including his, that Steve Martin knew how to dress for his King Tut song skit on Saturday Night Live in 1979. So if you didn't think it affected you personally, there's that. Okay, now that we've established when we were, where we were, and who were there with, let's talk about the more important things. When we say cats in ancient Egypt, what kind of cats are we talking about? Well, first of all, it does seem that cats were indigenous to Egypt. That doesn't mean that Egypt cornered the markets on them and all cats came from Egypt. It means they were native to there. They didn't come there from somewhere else. Like, say, for instance, horses came to the North American continent. Egypt grew its own, basically. There's evidence that the majority of world cats can trace their ancestry to an Egyptian cat. It's sometimes suggested that cats were introduced into Egypt from Persia around 2000 BC or from Nubia during the New Kingdom. But that's kind of unlikely. There is evidence that cats lived in Egypt before these dates. Archaeologists actually found a man interred with his cat in a burial mound. I'm not going to try to say where, but that dated to around 6,000 years ago. The cat might not have been domesticated, but was clearly important to the deceased, and is generally suggested that cats were domesticated in Egypt around 2000 BC. Let me say that again. Domesticated in Egypt around 2000 BC. Put a bookmark there. There were two main breeds of cats native to ancient Egypt. The jungle cat, Felis taus, and the African wildcat, Felis silvestris libica. The latter, the Egyptian wildcat, ironically had a calmer temperament and was so more commonly domesticated than the other. The two species eventually merged, creating a new breed which was closely related to the modern Egyptian Mau. As the cat was further domesticated, further changes in temperament and appearance became apparent. I take that to assume it means they got cushy. They kind of lost their edge a little bit. Cats became more colorful as the need to camouflage kind of lessened. Their bodies became smaller and less muscled due to less activity and a few more regular meals, most likely. Their brains became smaller as a result of the reduction in necessary survival instincts, and they developed an increased tolerance for humans. Let me digress from my reference material here. Does this sound like "here, kitty, kitty" type stuff to you? I am reading this and it doesn't to me. I think domesticated might be a relative term. It does not mean to them what it means to us today. Think of a modern day wildcat or bobcat or lynx or other medium-sized cat. Wildcat, that is. Every time you see a story about one being friendly and domesticated and almost like a pet, even though it could do some major damage to you, that story is remarkable, isn't it? And why is it remarkable? Well, it's because it's so rare. It's the exception. I tend to think and get the impression that that's the way it was in ancient Egypt also. I mean, I think the friendliness that I just described was probably, it phased in very slowly, but it might have just been as rare an occurrence as we have today. Of course, they didn't have house cats. They had a jungle cat and a wild cat. So, you can read into that. Okay, back to the reference. The Egyptians did not distinguish between a wild cat and a domesticated cat. All cats were known as mu or mute, spelled M-I-U-T, often translates into, often translated as he or she who mews. Doesn't that make sense? It seems that it was rare for a cat to be given its own specific name rather than being called mew or mute. There are exceptions, such as the cat named Nejim, Sweetie. Little girls were often named mute, literally meaning female cat, displaying the Egyptians' fondness for both cats and children. Okay, so there are cats in ancient Egypt. There are people in ancient Egypt. We know a little bit about the cats, but who owned them? What about the people? Well, that's a very basic two-part answer. Commoners and royalty. And let's take a look at the commoners first. The commoners were mostly farmers, as ancient Egypt was an agricultural society, and most farms were located along the Nile. As an agricultural society, Egyptians had a regular problem with mice, snakes, other beasties, and it really helped to have cats, the wild cats we mentioned, take care of these critters for them. Egyptians learned that they preyed on their scavengers, and they began to leave out food for them to tempt them to come closer. Most commonly was probably fish heads. That will attract a cat, as we know. That suited the cats perfectly, because being close to human settlements not only provided them with a steady food supply, such as the food left out, and the critters, mice, snakes, so on, it also provided them, being close to humans, provided them protection from larger predators. As the symbiotic relationship developed, mutually beneficial, that is, cats might come inside when it was hot, and in turn they would chase dangerous animals such as snakes and scorpions out of the house. Slowly but surely, they began to cohabit with people inside the houses on a regular basis. Let me put another bookmark here and do an aside. Again, this sounds a lot more like what we have today, but I would guard against thinking that's how it was. These cats sound like, more to me, like big feral cats and feral colonies. And keeping with that parallel, some feral cats are primitive, some are friendlier than others. Sometimes they'll come in the house, sometimes you can turn one and domesticate it. Most of the time you can't. They'll get close as long as they see it's in their benefit, but not closer. Not exactly pets, even though we use the word domesticated. That's the relationship that I kind of envision between the ancient Egyptians and these cats. Though not as upscale as those of royalty, Each family usually had its own tomb where the dead were laid to rest. The art on the walls of these tombs, along the Nile, not the Valley of Kings, but probably close to the homestead, these tombs record the family members' lives, as the royalties' tombs do. And the fact that cats were commonly depicted kind of gives credibility to the importance they had in the lives of their families. Wall art wasn't the only way cats were memorialized. They also were in tombs themselves through mummification. They would often mummify pet cats. It's been recorded that when a cat died, their human family would go into deep mourning and shave their eyebrows. The cat was wrapped in linen and treated with cedar oil and such spices as to have the quality of imparting a pleasant odor. I'm quoting now, preserving the body for a long time. The cat would then be buried along with provisions such as milk, mice, and rats. So, cats are very, very important to commoners, the common folk, the farmers. And though it might not be the cuddly relationship that we have with our cats today, my impression is very much that they were family members. That if a family had a cat that actually came inside and more or less hung out with the family regularly, that was a big status thing. That was bragging rights there. It was good times. I think it probably wasn't rare, but in my reading, the impression I get is it was the exception, not the rule. Cats hang around was everywhere. All it took to draw them was food. But to have the individual relationship and any element of affection, that was probably still not very common. On the other hand, royalty of the day had quite a different relationship with cats. You see, Egyptian deities and gods and their worship was administered by the pharaohs, the kings, and the cats figured prominently in this. Many animals were seen as representatives of gods, for example, crocodiles, hawks, and cows. Yes, we get the term sacred cow from this time. But the animals themselves were not considered to be divine, not considered to be gods. However, there is some evidence that every cat was considered to be a demigod, although some Egyptologists don't agree. According to one theory, the cat as a semi-divine being could not be owned by a mere human. Only the pharaoh had a high enough status to own a cat. Thus, all cats were under the guardianship of the pharaoh, and harming a cat amounted to treason. Unlike the symbiotic, mutually beneficial relationship with the people of the Nile, the cat became a pampered pet in the homes of royalty and noble families. Again, there's far fewer of this kind of people, and I think when a cat was found to be really friendly, it kind of got shuttled off to a royal palace somewhere. It didn't stay among the common folk for very long. There was, I'm sad to say, truly sad, a much less pleasant side to the demigod status of cats. Cats were also mummified as a votive offering to the goddess Bast. The mummified cats were most often buried in Bubatis. Again, I don't have a chance of saying these names right, probably. But tombs have also been discovered in Giza, Abydos, Dendera, and Beni Hassan. For example, a tomb in Beni Hassan was discovered in 1888, which contained an estimated, get ready, 80,000 feline burials. These cats, unlike beloved pets, seem to have been bred for this purpose and intentionally killed by strangulation or blunt force to the head as a form of sacrifice to the goddess. So how do we know what we know about cats in ancient Egyptian culture? Well, along with hieroglyphics, obelisks, and geometric patterns, cats feature prominently in ancient Egyptian art. Again, the main form of this art was temple and crypt and tomb drawings. This art reflected the cat's unique status among the people who dwelled along the Nile River. In addition to initially being adopted as useful predators, they gradually became symbols of divinity and protection. Art really does offer the best way to trace the cat's rise to glory in ancient Egypt. One of the first artistic representations, the fresco found in the tomb of an ancient Egyptian official, Maket III, this dated to the 21st century, a little before the First Kingdom, shows a cat confronting a field rat, proving the animal's vital role in keeping crops safe. However, from about 1450 BC onward, the cat began to be shown frequently in tomb scenes, especially at Thebes, the Egyptian capital during the New Kingdom era. The famous fresco from the Nebamum's tomb shows a beautifully painted cat attacking birds, accompanying its owner on a fowl hunt, F-O-W-L, fowl hunt. This 3,500-year-old tabby is depicted in such detail that it could easily be mistaken for a work of the Old Masters. By Old Masters, if you ever seen any of Picasso's art, he was a cat guy. If you haven't, I really encourage you to get on the internet and do an image search. Picasso cat art. Anyway, this painting, 3,500 years old, bears a lot of similarity to that. The cat generally became more important over time, and the tomb scenes show this change. The art shifts from outdoor scenes to more intimate domestic settings. The cat seated near or under an owner's chair reminds us of the animal's newfound role. While it is certain that the cat became an important part of the household, both in an urban and rural setting, representations of the cats can be interpreted differently. Keep in mind that ancient Egyptians' paintings also had symbolic meanings. For instance, the cat was often depicted under the wife's chair, symbolizing fertility and femininity, complementing the long-established motif of dogs sitting or lying under the chair of her husband. Other royal tomb art depicts cats being allowed to eat off plates. Like I said, I think it was quite a different relationship that cats had with their royal owners than they did with their commoners. The most famous cat deity was Bast, but there are also a number of other ancient Egyptian gods who were associated with cats. Neith occasionally took the form of a cat, and the cat was one of Mut's ancient symbols. Several ancient Egyptian deities were depicted and sculptured with cat-like heads, such as Maldet, Bastet, and Sekhmet, and this symbolized justice, fertility, and power. Though it's hard to say the Egyptians thought one thing or another, since so much change happened across the 3,000 plus years of their history, one thing is pretty clear. The ancient Egyptians, in general, did not worship animals. Rather, they saw animals as representations of divine aspects of their gods. With the cat, that line seems to have blurred quite a bit. Whether or not they were worshipped as deities, cats were an integral part of ancient Egyptian life and culture. Quite exalted. So how and when did that change? That's one question whose answer is fairly easy to pinpoint. This culture and the exalted place it had for cats lasted until 30 AD. That is the year that Egypt became part of the Roman Empire. In many ways, ancient Egypt's party was over, and their relationship with cats was one of those ways. Over the next few centuries, the next few hundred years, the first few hundred years AD, the Roman Empire, banned certain religious ceremonies and beliefs from being practiced in its territory. As you might imagine, they wanted everybody on board with worshiping the Caesars. Local rules were preempted by the rules of the empire. So that was the beginning in Egypt of cat worshiping and religion growing apart. And it was then that the affection and significance for cats in Egyptian culture went into decline. All things pass, folks, and that's bittersweet. I mean, most of us would agree that cats are not actually gods, even though some cats we know might still think so. It is a lesson they certainly haven't forgotten, but it's my impression from researching this episode that the affection, the cat fancy, is far more widespread and pervasive in the rest of the world than it ever was back then. I think the ancient Egyptians would be happy to know that and to see the form it takes today. If you like this episode, please consider sharing it on your social media platforms and writing a positive review for it where you listen to it. Both those things would really help. Until next time, love cats.